Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston.
Jordan.
What's going on?
Oh, just living life. Golfing a little golf.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
Both of us. It's good. It's always good to play some golf. I wish I would have played a little bit better golf on on one day over the next. I just needed to swap my Saturday and Monday rounds. It would have been a good week.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because then I would have had a chance. Then I would have been in a playoff to Monday qualify.
Yeah.
So,
at the Bonneville, how was the course playing?
It was playing fair, but there was a lot of pins that aren't normally there. I play it quite a bit, right? But it was good. Like everything was, it wasn't super, super firm, but there was a little bit of rain the night before.
Yeah.
And so they played a little bit softer and not like ultra fast as they can get them. But there was some pins that aren't normally there. Even Mitch Scow, who is a graduate, who's got some, I think he had some Canadian tour, but has kind of bounced around, had some Latin American tour status and turned that down. And I think had some Canadian tour status and just hasn't played much up there. But he ended up low qualifier, shot 63. He was actually playing in the group in front of us and Duke and putt. And like it didn't look, you know how you can kind of tell if somebody's how well they're playing in front of you.
Yeah.
Because you get to see him on and everything. It didn't look like he was playing bad, but it didn't look like it was a 29 backside 63. But it did seem like whenever we watched him, he was picking the ball out of the hole or he had already, like he was holding the flag and waiting for the guys to putt out. But it's the same thing when I played with him a few years ago in the Salt Lake City Open. Just anything from 10 feet was just cash.
Yeah.
But he was playing good. And he even said, he's like, there's a lot of pins that they had in pins in spots that I've never seen it before. But no, it was good. It was good. First couple of holes. Like holes 2 and 4, which are probably the two of the tougher greens on the course.
Yeah.
My group hits one on 2 and it just kind of trickles and rolls off the right edge. And he goes, and before we could say anything, because I had a buddy of mine who plays with me a lot up there, didn't say anything, but I guess as he was walking, he's walking after he hit a shot, he's like, welcome to Bonneville. And yeah, it's kind of what we were thinking. And then the guy in number 4 did the same thing where he hit it and it just kind of, there's a couple of edges where they fall off and they put them close enough, but not like super close. But when you get a little bit aggressive, they go off. And so there was a couple of things like that. But no, it was playing tough but fair. But 67 getting into a playoff was not, I'm sure, what was expected of that course, especially when you look at it, just when you look at the scorecard, it's not an ultra long course. I mean, you had guys, and I just had to kind of punch it down, and it was right into the face. But I mean, the first hole, it's a par 5 that you're hitting driver, and on a good day, you have inside 150 yards because it's a pretty severe downhill, and then it goes back uphill, but you're still, you know, hitting anywhere from an 8-iron to a pitching wedge in to that green. And then there's a couple other ones, same thing, right? You're hitting irons into most of the par fives for your second shot. So it's definitely a course that is out there, but the green complex is definitely protected a little bit. And it was breezy. Wouldn't say windy. I mean, there was some gusts, but it was playing harder than it has. Yeah. And for it to end up in 67, I was actually predicting 65 and an outside chance of 66. But for it to move to 67 was a little surprising for sure. But a lot of Utah guys got through. He had a couple of current Cougars and one former Coug get in through the Monday qualifier, and you get in through the Monday qualifier and Mitchell Scow. And you have a couple of ex-Cougs that were in already, and then one that got a sponsor's exemption in Utes, Blake Tomlinson, who got a sponsor's exemption into it. So very heavily Utah. I think they've got like 7 Utah players or with ties that actually went to high school in Utah is what they were saying that are playing in it, which is pretty crazy.
That's pretty
for
awesome.
Sure. But Utah golf's getting better. For sure. Well, let's kind of go into the big tour, the PGA Tour.
Yeah, the big one.
Which was a runaway victory by Lee Hodges.
Yeah. I mean, as we discussed, kind of a runaway.
Kind of a runaway. It's not quite as much of a runaway as the final tally makes it out to be. Little 4-shot swing on the final hole. He with Lee Hodges birdieing it and JT Poston probably, I don't know. It's, you want to get up there because it's a par 5 and you want to like, okay, I need to try to make a 3 to squeeze up and maybe Hodges makes a mistake. But from the sounds of it, because by then I left to go put in some work before the Monday qualifier, so I didn't watch the end of it. But it sounds like he had a little bit of a squirrely lie, hit it to the water and then dropped and then kind of made an 8 by the end of the day. So it's kind of one of those situations that Oosthuizen was in a few years ago at the US Open that Rahm won, where he was in the left rough and he laid up and just saying, okay, I'm going to need to try to make a 3 with a wedge in my hand.
Yeah.
Right. Just because the percentages are not there for me to reach the green or nothing good is going to happen going for it at that point. And maybe that's what Poston should have trusted a wedge and just tried to make it from the fairway rather than try to push it up there. But he made the decision that he felt was right and was like, hey, I'm not out here for second place. So, and he still got second place, just a tie for seconds.
Yeah.
A solo second. But yeah, so he gets his first victory, 7 shots. But it was, like I said, I watched a little bit of it on Sunday and Lee Hodges was not taking his foot off the gas.
No.
I think I said he made 2 eagles in the final round. So, and one of the shots that he hit on one of the par fives, it was not like just a, you know, ho-hum. It was a fairway wood and took a really, really aggressive line to make that eagle. So he was not taking the foot off the gas, which I think is sometimes how you have to play. You have to play like you're fighting for that win rather than you know, just coasting in with that big lead. So congrats to him on his first victory and getting it done, and just definitely not taking the foot off the gas and making what you questionable decisions, questionable plays when you have a shot that or a lead that large.
Yep.
But it worked out.
It was good. Pretty exciting. And this was like a scoring frenzy. I have a friend who is a member at that particular course, and the one thing he said was the wind was not blowing at all. And that's one of its best defenses, is the wind that's out there. And so with calm conditions, which they're very, very surprised to receive, just they blitz the course. And so the new scoring record, opening rounds of 63-64, just set the tone. And Lee actually ranked first in strokes gained tee to green, and then fourth in strokes gained putting. So when you put those together,
yeah, that's usually a pretty good. You're probably gonna get a win out of that.
Yeah.
Probably 99.9% chance if that's your stats coming out of the week that you're gonna get a win.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously strokes gained putting's huge, but yeah, you can usually get away with a tournament, but I mean, if you're not putting that great, but when you're putting that good, it's like that's a no-brainer right there. So super commanding victory, and exciting tournament for other reasons, which we'll discuss. But
what are those other reasons why that was an exciting tournament?
Well, if you're into Utah golfers, Zach Blair shot 64 with a T13 finish, which requalified him from his medical exemption, giving him full status on the PGA Tour. Yeah,
and he's had a couple of good finishes, which obviously he needed before the end of the year to retain his card from his medical exemption.
Yep.
And so gets there. And
I don't know Zach. I don't know if I'd like the guy or not, but the one reason I like to follow his stuff is because he is statistically one of the shortest hitters on the PGA Tour. And for a guy like that to do what he does out there, to me, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And you have to, right? But it's on a course like this that may not require that distance.
Yeah.
That you can get away with being really, really, because he is really, really good with his wedges and with his putter for the most part. But yeah, he just knows his game, right? He just knows where he needs to make up his shots. So
yeah, I mean, the course was, it maybe didn't play this long, but the course is built to play at 7,500 yards for the tour. So maybe it bounced in between 7,200 and 7,500. I don't know. Maybe it was even a little bit more, but that's a really long course. So pretty impressive. And the ball wasn't rolling that much from what I could see, just because of the rain that came in. But they were definitely taking advantage of that. So,
I mean, even when you look at his overall, I don't know. Maybe he's getting a little bit better with his driving. I don't know.
And his shoulder's better. I mean, that's the whole reason he took the leave. So maybe he's got a little more pop in him.
The driving accuracy is is significantly up there. But he's two, his driving distance for the year is 280.1, 190th on tour.
Yeah, or in other words, almost last.
Really close.
I mean, what do you need to be? You need to be top 125 to secure your card. So
Yes.
if you're not in the top 125 in a particular statistic, you're not even like ranked.
Right. I mean, if you look at it, so he's there, and there's a lot because we just looked up JT Poston, right? We were talking about he was not in there. So he was at 2.6, right? This year for Zach Blair, he's at 2.3 is what it has him, right? But he has a he and mind you, this is where having a really good showing at a elevated event where he ties for second and makes 1.7 in one tournament makes a huge difference. But yeah, he's 2.3 this year. Has a right, just tells you how important those elevated events are at this point, right? So he's not in as of now. He's got his tour card back, but needs to play well this week to try to move himself up into the playoffs, right? And everybody's goal at that point is obviously to right for somebody like Black Zach Blair with where he's at is my guess. This is just my thinking, right? I don't have personal conversations with Zach. I met him a few times, talked to him a few times. But it was like, okay, get back, retain my card from my medical exemption. Get in, right? Retain your card, period, for the next year. Then it'd be make it into the playoffs because then that comes with some benefits. And then make it to the tour championship, which gets you in all the majors, basically secures you for a while. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, good to see him perform well in those. But yeah, it's like you said, he knows his game and just gets it around and does what he has to. It's like me out there with the guys that I was playing with, the guys that travel around. And I just knew that I was going to be hitting first a lot on my second shots, right? Just because I was going to be anywhere from 15 to 40 yards behind the guys that I was playing with.
Yep.
But then you just, right, got to plot it around and do some things, which I didn't putt and chip as good as I have been in lately, which probably cost me three, four shots at least, which then puts me close, right?
Yeah.
But I've gotten to the point in my golfing career where I just know that that's what it's going to be right now, right? I'm going to beat people because I hit the ball in the fairways for the most part, hit it on greens, roll in some putts, and then I'm pretty solid around the greens with the wedges and with the putter. So in that way, very comparable to what Zach Blair does on different levels, but same type of thing. But yes, good to see him. Tony gets a T7. And yes, it was a very cold fourth round.
Yeah.
I don't think he had a birdie till like shoot, like eight.
And that was the only birdie of the tournament for him.
I think he made, yeah, it was, but I mean T7, so gets him another one. I don't know if he's playing this. Is he playing this week?
I don't.
He might just so that he can try to have a good finish to try to secure his spot for the Ryder Cup. But that would be the only reason. But I don't think he is, because he came back and had his charity event yesterday at Oak Ridge, which is where the Korn Ferry event is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's not playing. It wouldn't make sense for him to fly here and then fly back. But the one person I'm fairly interested to see if he's playing, but I didn't see him, just doing a quick scroll, whether Justin Thomas is playing, because
he is. Yeah. He's in the field at the Wyndham. I did.
And he has to be.
Yeah, he needs to play some golf.
He has to be. Like I said, at this point, in my mind, there's zero chance, if I'm Zach Johnson, that I'm picking Justin Thomas. You know, whether he's a good locker room guy or not, you can be a great locker room guy all you want, but if you're going out and getting stomped in your matches, it doesn't make a difference. So, crazy. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because there's some, obviously, Justin Thomas. There's a few things. We've got Zach Blair's in the field. Peter Quest is in the field. Who made another cut, had a solid performance. So he's kind of fighting for that, to retain his card, or to get a card for next year, and to maybe have something pop for him this week and make his way into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which would be big. So, on the auxiliary tours, by that I mean
the other guys,
that and the ladies, the LPGA, they had an off, and this is, they do it very rarely, but they did have a opposite field event, because they did have the Evian Championship, which is a major for the LPGA. But Celine Boutier wins in what was another runaway.
It was a largest margin of victory in a women's major in 8 years. So that's pretty big deal. And she is French and has played in her home country. So pretty exciting to get the little victory in the homeland.
Yeah, and she put it together, because she had the lead at least after 36 holes. I think she may have been up near the lead. I'm just going through the first round. I think she was tied for the lead after the first round. So she was two back after round one, and then in the lead after 36 and 54, and then just kept it going. But another thing that made probably more news than her winning by six shots was Carlotta Segonda.
Yeah.
Basically DQ'd herself for not accepting a penalty. Slow play penalty, which she appealed, and the ruling was upheld, and she decided that she would rather get a disqualification than sign for that score and accept the penalty. And she would have missed the cut with that anyway, but she decided to, either way, she was going home. So she was going to make a point.
Yeah. I mean, it's maybe it's a certain way to pad your stats. Like, I was disqualified. I did not miss
the cut. I was disqualified. I don't know where that falls in there, but I think it was more of, she was upset with the ruling. She didn't agree with it even after the appeal was upheld. Sounds like she has had a penalty for slow play in the past.
Mm-hmm.
and felt like she was being singled out. But I don't know. They were warned on 16. Sounds like it was a tougher day. And I didn't watch it, so I didn't see it, so I don't know. I don't have a firsthand account of it. But if it was windy and she's got a putt that she's trying to make to guarantee that she makes the cut, it sounds like, I think it was 52 seconds, which I think you get like, what is it, 45, 48?
45.
So 45. So 7 seconds, but I mean, in that situation, there's a little bit of leniency. And she said the group behind him wasn't even on the tee box of a par five.
Yeah. Here's what happens. I mean, let's really think about when somebody gets penalized. It's not that the ref or whatever rules official just happens to see them breaking the time that one time.
Says,
they see
they it were warned. Once,
and they're like, okay, let's watch them again. And then they see it again. Then they warn them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they see it again. And that's when they're like, okay, strike three, you're out. Right?
Yeah.
They're looking for a pattern. And so to think that she was targeted, well, after the first infraction and you didn't get any penalty for it, dang right, you're targeted. And then the second time you're warned, yeah, you're targeted because you're showing a pattern. So she just
and it was their entire group that got warned, right? So I don't know. It's right there. I did, like I said, I didn't see it. I think as a rules official, there is a gray area where, like, if it is windy and the situation, an extra few seconds, I don't know. But at the same time, there was obviously a pattern. They'd been warned. So it wasn't just, oh, you missed it once. You're out of here. So I can see both sides of it. I see both sides of it. I see her saying, well, you weren't paying attention to the situation. I don't think I took 52 seconds. But I think what a lot of players and people don't understand is the 45 seconds doesn't start when you're over the ball. The 45 seconds starts when it is reasonably your turn to play.
Yep.
Right. And we talked about this with Brian Harman with his waggles. And he's admitted, he's like, I know I waggle. And but when I started doing that and taking some time, he's like, I started playing a lot better. But he has stated, he's like, but to try to combat that, I make sure that I am ready to go when it's my turn. So I do all my yardage stuff and everything of that prior to it being my turn, so that when I do take those extra waggles, he's not slowing down play. And I said this, and they're focusing on strictly his time over the ball, but I'm like, you've got to look at it as a whole. I'm like, I didn't feel like he was a slow player, except for that it's portrayed as slow because he does take a few extra waggles in time to hit the ball. So that's what a lot of people, the clock starts when it is your turn to play. You have 45 seconds. So,
And if you're not looking for a way to prepare for your shot while other people are hitting, then
you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it way wrong. Just walk off the course.
Alex Chica, another major being played for the senior tour, the senior open, that was Royal Fourth Call in Wales. He wins on the second playoff hole with two birdies on 18, which is a par five, against Padraig Harrington. But five over when he scored in the last day was brutal, because he shoots five over in the final round. Padraig shoots four over in the final round. So it was some true links golf, a little, some weather, some wind, some rain. So they had it all going for him on that final round. But Jacob gets a win and gets himself, I think it's I'm pretty sure he's won one or two other majors on the senior tour. But this is classic guy who just journey. I don't want to say journeyman because he was a solid player on the PGA Tour, but doesn't have a lot of wins on the PGA Tour and goes to the senior tour and gets a renewed life to get it done. So, but yeah, the one person that we talked about a little bit for Utah golfers updates, there's more and more of them, which is kind of exciting for us. Peter
Yeah.
Quest with his P50 this week. But he'd earned special tour or earned tour special temporary membership status before this, right? Because you've got it noted on here that he earned it this week, or it was the week. It was when he T17, I thought, when
Yeah.
in one of his earlier tournaments. But this is just kind of solidifying him in the rankings and on his way to get his card. So.
Which is exciting. I mean, to Monday qualify your way into a special temporary exemption on the tour. That doesn't happen by very many players, so.
No, we didn't talk about Patrick Fishburne for the Korn Ferry,
No,
who has
we
been
didn't.
playing much, much better of late.
Yep.
Gets himself into a playoff with he drops a bomb on 18 for Eagle to get into the playoff. Trying to remember. Bro, I think was the guy who ended up winning the tournament in the first playoff hole makes a huge putt. It had to have been 20 to 25 feet for birdie to continue the playoff. But then in the just trying to see exactly what happened, but in on second playoff hole, Fishburne hits it in the bunker, then leaves it in the bunker and makes a bogey. And Crow makes a easy par for the win. Although it is really hard to pull up Korn Ferry stuff.
It's hard to pull up any past information. It's like a chore. It's incredible. It's always focusing on the next thing, but
It always is. Unless you get it to it, they keep it up through Monday. But yeah, he's been playing really good, and I guess hoping that after he got that eagle to get into the playoff, that he was gonna get it done. But he's trying to push, and I know that last year he was like 30. I think they take 30, and he was 31 after the regular season last year in the Korn Ferry, and then 31 again. One shot out of it both times last year, and it had a really kind of slow start to the season, but has kind of started to put some stuff together in these last few weeks to move up the rankings. I'm actually going to look and see where he's falling now, but yeah, has had, I think, three really, really solid starts in a row to push himself up that list. Yeah, it pushed him into, said he went up. Yeah, he's up inside the top 20 now, so he's in it. Which is huge because I believe the Utah Championship, which is this week, is the last regular season tournament of the year. So if he has a good finish, which last year he did, yeah, he's 15th, up 34 spots after that second place finish. So
yeah,
looking, we could have huge representation on the tour next year from Utah with Fishburne, Blair, Finau, Quest. Yeah.
Pretty strong.
Pretty strong representation on that. So that'll be cool if he does. I'm going to pull up the schedule again and see when the playoffs start. They got he's got three. So you've got, you've got three tournaments before the playoffs start. So if he plays good the next 3 weeks, if he plays good this week, I think he pretty much solidifies it moving forward, which he's in a really good spot going into a place that he's probably played hundreds and hundreds of times this year. So good stuff. I didn't know that he had moved up that much, but that's awesome.
Yeah, huge, huge movement.
So now let's go into our favorite segment. Well, yeah, Utah golfer updates may become our favorite segment moving forward, because it's getting deep fun. Now, baby. Getting fun. Deep. we may be very, very corn heavy or corn fairy heavy this next week if our Utah boys, make good showings. So,
equipment. PGA Tour throws out this announcement with other things, which we're not going to discuss, but I think the most pertinent thing was PGA Tour will not support golf ball rollback or changes. So now we've got the PGA Tour just completely combating the USGA. Why is this a problem? Well, the USGA...
It's not a problem for the PGA Tour. You know what's the problem for? It's a problem for the USGA.
Yes, because the US Open is heavily participated by the best tour players in the world. And if they put out a rule or roll back the ball, then that's going to change
everything. How
that little tournament's played, and we could have a problem on our hands. So I am against the rollback or changes. I think there's other ways to do it. Yes, I know things fly farther, but I don't support it. And you can go and listen to other podcasts about it, but I'll leave it at that. But the USGA is trying to, I don't know what they're trying to do. And I don't really care.
This effectively kills the rollback, right? Because their thought was that the rollback was basically going to be for higher levels of golf.
Yep.
But as soon as the PGA Tour does not accept it,
oh,
who else is going to, right?
Yeah, maybe they thought they had a chance, but with people like Tiger saying they need to do it and other key members of the tour, but tour as a whole, I think, probably had a vote. And they're like,
was because really, I mean, Tiger he hasn't been as vocal. The most vocal person was Rory that came out for it. But he was one out of, so that if Tiger is, they're two out of like 200 tour pros that were for it. So, and the fact that then leadership of the tour says, nah, that's not going to happen. It in my mind, it's effectively squashed. Because what are you going to do? Just do it for the USGA events? It's not going to fly, because what is everybody's ultimate goal? It's, yes, playing in USGA events is a big part of that, but 98% of the other golf that that young players strive for is tour.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Squashed.
Squashed. So this one's pretty cool, and most people probably haven't seen this, but I thought this was a really cool thing for Ping to do. This year they released a commemorative Ping Slam series of putters, because back in 1988, Ping putters were used to win all four majors, and that never happened before, so it was kind of a big deal. And those putters that were used were then redesigned and milled and then released. And the putters were the Ping Pal, the Ping Zing 2, the Answer, and the Ping Pal 2. So all of those were redesigned, milled, and CNC, and re-released for each major. And it's pretty cool. If you get a chance to go to the website, check it out.
Actually looking at it now, and they are all sold out, just by the way, just so you know.
Yeah, very, very, very limited.
Very quickly.
They said at the end of the year, we'll offer 35 full sets of all four models and a display rack for $5,000. And that, yeah, they had released them subsequently throughout the year.
Yeah, and insane singles. And then, yeah, they're the collection on December 5th. So save your shekels, boys.
Yeah, it's pretty cool though. Go check it out, because they actually mimic the same finishes of those putters from back then. They had like the aluminum bronze, and one of them's like aged. So it's pretty awesome. I think it's really cool, and I always love to see some heritage there. So go check that out. And then today, Callaway officially released their Apex Tour CB and MB irons, which there was a sneak peek picture hopping around on the social medias, and I wasn't impressed. Were you impressed?
No, we've discussed it. So yeah. They officially launched it, and yeah, it is what it is. Like I said, if they play well. They play well. I don't know. We obviously haven't seen a top down view. But no, not their best work in our humble opinions.
Yeah. But they came out. So it's stuff.
Yeah, it's nice.
And then, in Lee Hodge's bag, there's a few things that came out here. It's like when it rains, it pours. But yes. We'll jump through this. The driver, the Titleist TSR2, was in the bag with the Fujikura Speeder 757 in a TX. Super, I mean, that shaft just brings back memories. Obviously not the same one he used, but I remember playing that back in like high school when it originally came out, which was pretty wild. Then the three wood, the Titleist TSR3, 15 degrees. And you probably know more about this shaft than I do, but the UST Mamiya.
The Link U, no. I actually don't know much about this, because this is not one that we had. When you're setting up your fitting studio, it's impossible to carry every shaft. Available. Yes. And some of that is that went into the decision when we were doing it at Impact, was the Link U is actually offers a stock option, so it's a harder one to sell, because they're like, well, why don't I just, it's available online, but like the Tensei, it's different. The stock version, they have a Ventus shaft out there as a stock option. But it doesn't have VeloCore. So there are differences in it. And I know a couple of people who play it, and it seems like a decent shaft. But it's when you're doing custom fitting, it can be hard sometimes to sell a shaft that the player sees that is available as a no upcharge option, and you're right, because that one is their aftermarketed option. It ranges anywhere from $300 to $400.
Yep.
So that's a, why am I paying $300 for this shaft when I can just get it as part of, I can just order it with the glove.
Yeah, that makes it tough. But he's got, usually we see this reversed. Usually we see the TSR3 in the driver and then the TSR2 in the fairways.
Yeah.
But this way he's going TSR2 driver, then TSR3 in the fairway. And then the hybrid, the TSR3 hybrid at 21.
Yes.
And
I want to say, did they do the TSR2? They may have done the TSR2 in the hybrid, because I know that the TSI version, the two TSI2 looked better as in the fairway wood anyway, looked better in the fairway wood than the TSR3 did. Looked like it sat a little bit better in a couple of things. And I think they improved a lot of stuff on the TSR3 this time to make it look more appealing as a fairway wood. TSR2, it's just a little, usually is a little bit higher launching, maybe spins a little bit more, but it, which is probably why he plays it as at an 8 degree with a very boardy shaft. Right. So he's just found that mix that works for him.
Yep.
And this one is a little bit different. There are some things in his irons that are the same as some recent stuff, but he goes T100 in 4 through 6. So yep. He's got another mix set, which in the latest couple of versions of the TS or the T100 of the T series irons, they have been a lot better with being able to do this, where you can have a mix set and there's not a ton of look differential to them either. So he goes T100 4 through 6, and then in the 7 through 9 is the Titleist 620 CB. Yep. You may have heard that before in the last month.
That's what's been kind of crazy, is that this iron has now been popping up in winner circles this year consistently. So it's pretty crazy to see that happen. I mean, and I straight up just said this iron is just not a fan favorite in the Titleist lineup. And here we have a ton of players actually winning tournaments with it. Yeah. So my mouth, right? But it's just what I saw. And now I've actually been checking what's in the bag pictures, and I've seen them pop up a little bit more and more too. So
yeah. But he does have the worst shaft on the planet. Sorry.
I'm
a big fan of a lot of KBS stuff.
But that's
not one of them.
it's harsh. But that's the Tour C Taper 130X. Yeah. And that's a board, by the way. Yeah. Like, I think I could probably play just the S's and be fine, but you throw X's and that's just stout.
Yeah, that's hard. And he plays that all the way, the 130X, all the way through the 52 degree.
Yeah.
So he plays Volk, he plays the CBs to the 9 iron, and then goes SM9s in his 46 and 52, which he's got a higher, and I think it only comes in a 10 or 12 degree in the 46. If I recall, but he does go a lower bounce in his 52 with the 8 degree F, but then goes to a little bit more bounce in the 56S. And then for the second week in a row,
I know,
6004 L grind comes out.
The L grind pops up. It'd been a while since we'd seen that, but it's a great wedge. It really is. It's fantastic for, like, just full swing shots, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It handles those better than some of the other wedges out there.
Right.
And if you're comfortable with a full 60, that's a great wedge. Check that out. And then, yeah, rounds out the bag with the Scotty Cameron Golo 6 and a Titleist Pro V1. And he'd recently switched. He actually was a Pro V1 X guy for a long time, but wanted to flight the ball better. And I don't know if you guys have tested. I have tested this. The Pro V1 flies lower. It really does.
Yes, so, it does. Yeah, the X definitely flies a little higher. However they've done it, it's definitely flied it a little bit lower on that and spin. The one spins, it does both. It spins a little bit less. It flies a little bit lower.
Yeah.
So.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. And like I said, I had a buddy ask me when you're talking about golf balls, because he's like, are you a Titleist hater? And I'm like, no, I played the ball for a while. I've just have liked other balls better. Yep. And he goes, no, he's like, in general, do you hate Titleist? I'm like, no, they're a great company.
Yeah, I don't know why people would throw out. I mean, unless you have like a personal agenda or something. Yes. That happened, but you know, I'm not really that important, so I'm not really gonna be offended by much.
No, they're just there. But in the what's in the bag, they don't actually show a picture of his putter. Which, yep. Do your job, Duck off WRX. You're a partner with the PGA Tour. How do you not have a picture of every club in his bag?
It's a slick one. It's a short slant neck weld.
Yeah.
But yeah, not too shabby. Fun putter. Nice. Stuff.
So, yeah, good stuff. And hopefully we'll be talking a lot of Utah golf this week, because we could. I mean, you got Blair and Quest playing in the Wyndham event, and you have, like I said, 7 guys that played high school in Utah playing at the Utah Championship for the Corn Ferry.
Yeah.
So it'd be a big week for Utah golf. Let's hope for that. That's what I'll be rooting for. But yeah, I think that's it. Go play some golf. It's starting to cool down here after being a scorcher. It's supposed to be in the mid-80s the next week and a half. I'll be playing some golf. Hopefully, Weston, you will also.
Yep.
But yeah. But everybody, thanks for listening. If you have the time, give us a rating or review. But until next time, we are out.